talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I usual.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning, and welcome to We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And today is October 26th. We've been busy. Mm-hmm. I think in the week since the last time we sat in this room, I have seen 8 movies at the theater.
Oh, my God.
How many have you seen, Jim? You've seen 6?
Yeah.
You saw 6 screenings, I think. Oh, I saw 5 screenings, and then I played catch-up with Goosebumps and Bridge of Spies. Mm-hmm. And I saw Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension.
and Live to Tell.
Saturday night. But let's talk about the top 10 at the box office. I'm going to just take a guess. I bet The Last Witch Hunter slayed the competition. Am I right, Michelle?
Slayed? I get it. Yeah.
Actually, it was a bloodbath at the box office.
What?
There were 3 flops, actually. Lionsgate, The Last Witch Hunter, Paramount.
Flop!
Paranormal Activity, Boom. The Ghost Dimension, and even Universal Steve Jobs. They all failed to attract audiences at this weekend's box office.
Oh, man.
So, number one, Ridley Scott's The Martian took back the number one spot at the box office with $15.9
million. Very impressive.
Another stellar performance for Fox's movie as it adds another $45.9 million this weekend in the U.S., combined with the U.K. numbers of $30 million and the international numbers of $200 million, Ridley Scott's film is within striking distance of the $400 million mark.
Wow. That's about a month's release, something like mm-hmm. that?
Right? But I'm sure Last Witch Hunter was nipping at the Martian's heels for a strong number two, right?
At number two is Goosebumps.
I saw Goosebumps.
Yeah, with $15.5 million. Domestically, it's made over $43 million. At number three is Bridge of Spies. Disney spy thriller's doing quite well. It took in $11.4 million. And so it fell off only 26% in its second weekend.
What was it? Was it number three last weekend?
Mm-hmm. At number four was Lionsgate's bomb, The Last Witch Hunter. Starring Vin Diesel, Michael Caine, and Elijah Wood, the film which cost $70 million brought in only $10.8
million. $70
million? Estimates have that.
Oh, my goodness.
Worldwide.
Where did the money go?
Yeah. Yeah, well, to the special effects. Worldwide, it's at $24
million. Hmm.
That's sad.
But it beat Paranormal.
Mm-hmm. At number five is Sony's Hotel Transylvania 2. It continues to be an audience favorite as it scares up another $37.7 million and $315.8 million to date across the world. The sequel has already matched the entire domestic gross of the original. At number six is Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, with $8.2 million. Paranormal Activity 6 is the lowest grossing opening in franchise history with $8.2 million. But however, it did make its budget back overseas in one weekend with $18 million in 33 markets.
I saw it Saturday night at 9:20, and there was like nobody there.
Oh,
wow. Well, maybe there's a dozen people there.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah.
At number seven was Steve Jobs from Universal. That came in at $7.3 million, playing at 2,443 theaters.
Well, that's a lot.
But it did quite well when it was only at a few theaters.
Mm-hmm.
So what they should do is just put it back in a few theaters, and then it'll make more money.
Or audiences have said, well, we've already seen the movie and the documentary, so... at number eight, continuing to crash and burn is Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak.
Uh-huh.
That brought in only $5.6
million.
In
its second week.
I think it's a triumph. It's still in the top 10. Right?
Yeah.
Like I say, last week I said I wanted to like it more, and it just doesn't work as a film.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty.
The Intern was number nine with $3.9 million. Yeah, Warner Brothers Pictures still hanging in there.
Wow.
At number 10 was the Christian-based, faith-based Woodlawn. That came in at $3.1 million. At number 11 was Sicario at $3 million. And number 12 was Pan from Warner Brothers at $2.5
million.
How much of a bath are they going to take on that, I wonder?
A few other things to know. Other movies opening this past weekend. Two other films which didn't cost a lot to make were Universal's Gem and the Holograms and Open Road's Rock the Casbah, which opened at $1.3 million and $1.5 million respectively. That wasn't even good enough to crack the top 12 and marks the lowest openings ever for studio films released in at least 2,000 theaters. But at least these films won't be in the red for their respective studios. Gem and the Holograms, which adapts the 1980s cartoon of the same name, had a $5 million budget, and Rock the Casbah, which features Bill Murray as a rock promoter in Afghanistan, cost only $15 million to make.
So yeah, they'll triple those budgets then and turn a little bit of a problem.
So it opens this weekend. Burnt.
Yes, Our Brand is Crisis.
The Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. Room opens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I just wonder what's going to knock The Martian out of number one, if anything does.
I guess maybe Crisis maybe has the best chance, you think?
I bet Scout's Guide has a better chance than...
I don't know.
Burt, that's a hard R.
Trivial. It's an R then.
Huh? And it's a...
Okay.
Doesn't look very good.
One other thing to note, Ant-Man is close to the $500 million mark.
My goodness. Yeah, yeah. They've already said that it's going to be out on Blu-ray at the December 12th. So that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get started with our reviews. Let's start with Steve Jobs.
The board believes you're no longer necessary to this company.
I sat in a garage and invented the future because artists lead and hacks ask for a show of hands.
Jim and Michelle, you both saw Steve Jobs. I have not seen Steve Jobs. Is it better than the Ashton Kutcher biography of Steve Jobs?
Well, I didn't see that. Oh. Did you see that, Michelle?
No, I didn't.
The Ashton Kutcher one? Okay. I didn't see the recent documentary by Alex Gibney either. I'm hoping we'll get a screener DVD of that by the end of the year.
The reviews on that are phenomenal on Alex Gibney's film. And that opened in September.
Yeah, he could also get an Oscar nomination for that and for the Scientology flick, right? Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Should I give my views on Jobs first, or would you like to go? Well, this is one that's got a great cast, can't fault them. It's got some great performances. I think the main problem with it for most audiences, I remember when the script is by Aaron Sorkin, and I remember when The Social Network came out, Tom, you said, well, I don't really care about Facebook. I think a lot of this is going to affect people that they just don't care about the Mac or the home computer that much to see a film about a fellow that made it. That might be, you know, part of the problem of getting people in the theaters. Mm-hmm. That and the fact that in the film itself, well, there's some speculation a lot of the Mac cult or the Steve Jobs cult are going to go see it, and he comes off as the biggest jerk in this film. Mm-hmm. You just want to throttle him at times. He's just so cruel and mean, especially to his, I don't know if they never married, he and Chris Anna, I don't believe, right? There's his ex-paramour, his baby mama, I guess you could say, and his young child in it. The film is structured kind of like a play in three acts.
It's in three acts.
Yeah, and it's all sort of in the same setting, and it's all centered around the public launch of this, you know, the big projects there in 1984, 1988, and 1998. And he gets a visit from Steve Wozniak, who's who's played by Seth Rogen in a very good performance.
He's very
great
good.
Dramatic performance. He gets visited by his sort of an ex-mentor, sort of co-boss, John Scully, played by Jeff Daniels, and Jeff is always very good. Also, he deals with a tech guy named Andy Hertzfeld, another great performance by Michael Stuhlbarg.
Isn't he fantastic?
Yeah, he's terrific. He was great in Pawn Sacrifice just a couple of months ago, and he's a strong actor. Plus, he's sort of, Steve is being calmed down by Kate Winslet as Johanna Hoffman. She's very good, but as our critic friend Lynn Van House mentioned, and I realized this, she's supposed to be Polish, and her accent doesn't really kick in until 1988. It seems like that first segment, you're not hearing a lot of it, and then it's really, you know, she's really hitting it pretty hard there. Certainly by 1998, she's almost you know, the daughter of Maria Uspenskaya by that point.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
You know.
Now, this is the film that originally was supposed to be directed by David Fincher, with Christian Bale taking on the lead role.
Oh,
well, maybe they'll still make that. I mean, there's been enough Steve Jobs movies the past.
Well, this might be the one to finish up on. Yeah.
I mean, it's an excellent film, and it's an award season, it's an Oscar season movie, so I don't think... You know, a great film sometimes doesn't translate into box office success. So, and it's the third. I mean, are people Steve Jobs fatigued now? Is
that,
it? Well,
that but, might be part of it. Plus, I mentioned Aaron Sorkin.
Mm-hmm.
His script is good, but it at times it feels like a parody of Aaron Sorkin. Mm-hmm. And I was mentioning this to my friend Scott, who I saw it with, and I said, boy, he loves the talkie talk. And then I realized, yes, he likes the walkie talk too, and the talkie walk. Mm-hmm. So when people are talking, they're always walking through endless hallways and corridors. So it seems, like I say, almost a parody of his work on The West Wing, which they parodied with Aaron on 30 Rock a couple of years ago, the TV sitcom, and recently on the Amy Schumer program. It's, like I say, it's pretty tiring after a while.
Right. I mean, and I love the score by Daniel Pemberton. He did The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It sounds very, you know, a technical, computerized score.
Yeah, and we're leaving out Michael Fassbender, who's terrific as usual.
Electrifying.
You know.
He just,
but,
yeah.
Oh, but he's such a jerk.
But, and Michael Fassbender is still not a box office draw. He's just not a name that's going to, you know, pull people in.
Yeah. Like I say, that play a plus the subject matter. And like I say, it's there's very, very little quiet time in it. Somebody is always talking or pontificating. Some of the flashback sequences are nice, but I wish I could recommend it. It's I know some people at the screening that I attended last week my friend said it was spectacular, and I was kind of starting to doze off a little bit.
How it does this coming award season.
Box office failure will hurt its Oscar chances.
Right.
I suspect Fassbender will be nominated,
but he's
going to be a front
runner.
But
he's also in Macbeth coming up. So if I was going to nominate him for anything, it would be Macbeth.
Yeah,
and he had strong reviews out of the Cannes Film Festival.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Marion Cotillard.
But he's watchable in anything.
Oh, so, Michael across the board. Yeah.
But like I say, I wish we could wholeheartedly recommend it. But if you're into the computer stuff.
Mixed review for Steve Jobs. Not a mixed review for The Last Witch Hunter.
You're a dreamwalker. Get out. I need you to take me to the dream world. It's the only way to fight what's coming.
Good night, nurse.
I'm looking forward to this.
I think last week we were sort of excited about The Last Witch Hunter.
I
don't know why, though. You watch a trailer, you think, this is going to be terrible.
But Tom and I picked Last Witch Hunter over Steve Jobs.
Yeah, and I was hoping it would be fun.
Well, this isn't in 3D, is it? The Witch
Hunter? That wouldn't have helped. Although, he does wield a flaming broadsword. I don't know what the advantage of his sword being on fire. It seems like that would actually be worse, because if you slice somebody with a sword and it's on fire, then it's going to cauterize the wound right away. I mean, isn't just getting hit with a regular sword, an extinguished sword, going to be just as effective?
Well, it looks cool.
Yeah, it does look cool. It's very cinematic. Lots of things on fire in The Last Witch Hunter. And we talked about how it looked like a movie that Nicolas Cage had turned down. Nicolas Cage would have brought a little sense of self-awareness.
Does Nick Cage turn down films?
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of.
But Tom and I were talking after the screening with Andy Trifenbeck from Destroy the Brain. We were all saying it should have been more campy. It should have been,
more fun.
It took itself
that's
serious, and that was deadly. And the movie's deadly dull, and Vin is just absolutely terrible. He just shows a shocking lack of range in this film. And
that's why I was so excited for it. I was like, oh, this is Vin Diesel, Fast and Furious. Yeah. No, this is not.
I'm Groot.
It's really boring. It's one of the worst films I've seen this year, but it's not offensively bad like some movies. And it's not even the worst movie I saw last week. And there's probably some 13-year-old fans of the Fast and Furious franchise who like Vin Diesel that may eat this stuff up. But it's just leaden. It just sits there. There's no momentum. Michael Caine has what's basically an extended cameo, and he sort of sleepwalks through it. You've got Elijah Wood, and who's this British actress who plays she owns this bar that's like a witch bar. But she's good. She actually teams up with Vin, and they battle the Queen Witch, who they refer to cleverly as Queen Witch throughout the film.
she's not even scary.
No, she's bland. She has this, her voice is sort of augmented, and she has some kind of cool makeup, and that's about it. Yeah, it's a pretty dreadful movie. Oh. I think it'll be on a lot of top 10 worst movies of 2015, I'm afraid. Yeah. So I reviewed it. I gave it 1 out of 5 stars.
Well, how's Elijah in it? Does he acquit himself well enough?
No, he's terrible. He's just terrible. He's supposed to be, Michael Caine plays the guy who Vin takes his marching orders from, but he gets murdered about 30 minutes in, and Elijah Wood sort of takes his place, but you're not supposed to trust him. He's sort of squirrely.
he's not screaming and running in terror a lot.
No. So we can't recommend The Last Witch Hunter. Apparently it's not doing very well anyway.
So it might be off the top 10 by next weekend.
Huh? Rose Leslie, the actress in it, she's in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I heard something about that she's wrapped in trees in one point, or maybe it's
the there's this flaming tree monster, mm-hmm. although it's made out of bones. I'm not even sure.
Yeah.
and it drags witches into sort of a witch hell limbo or something. It's not very well explained.
And if you're trying to make an epic, immortal movie, cast somebody. This was an unknown, the baddie.
Yeah, at least the Seventh Son had Julianne Moore.
Exactly. Put somebody in it. Good night. Yeah.
And then there's this swarm of flies, this giant swarm of flies that's going to threaten to take over Manhattan, and the flies sort of come up out of the sewers or something, but then somebody says a curse and the flies go away, so you don't even get this big climax with the flies attacking the city that they keep promising you. It's a lousy film.
And gosh knows, here at the site, we tried to help it with a top 10 best or top 12 best witches.
Oh boy.
We tried. I saw Paranormal Activity Ghost Dimension Saturday night.
I can't sleep.
What's going on?
Noises in my room.
You hear noises in your room? Okay, well, Daddy will go up and make sure everything's...
What the hell?
You see it?
We gotta find more of those tapes.
Historically, I've sort of enjoyed these paranormal activities. This is apparently the sixth one, but I would actually have to say this is the weakest of the six, which is kind of weird. They made two, I think, fatal errors with this. First place, they made it in 3D, which doesn't make any sense. The whole concept of the paranormal movies is that you're watching found footage from camcorders set up in a house. And so why would you be watching it in 3D? Do they set up, high-tech 3D camcorders in the house? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, I know why they did it, but it kind of takes you out of the film. And the second big mistake they show the demons or the ghosts. That's what made the first couple of Paranormal Activities scary, is what scared you is what you don't see. And they show the ghost, and the ghost form is this sort of black, inky tendrils that sort of float around, but they do other things too. They turn into a fist and they stick their black ink through people's bodies and kill them. And
sounds like the Spider-Man villain Venom a little bit.
it did remind me of Venom a little bit. It's basically the same story as the first several. This family moves into a house and they look up in the attic. And what do they find? They find a box of videotapes and an old 80s camcorder. So they watch these tapes, and it's the little girls from part 3, the two sisters. Hmm. As they're watching these tapes on a monitor, that they seem to be sort of interacting with them. A little girl walks by the monitor and sneezes, and the little girls on the TV say, "Bless you." And that's sort of creepy when that happens. But it turns out that the daughter of the family that's moved in is supposed to be some sort of oracle and help these witches bring this demon to life. And at the end, they show the demon, sort of. They showed its legs. It's sort of this cloven-hoofed creature. It's not very good, though. It doesn't scare you. It just sort of repeats all the scares from the first several films. I don't recommend Paranormal Activity Ghost Dimension. I do recommend Rock the Casbah, although Jim reviewed Rock the Casbah.
You're the only one recommending Rock the Casbah.
You gave it, what, 2.5 stars?
I was pretty generous, wasn't I?
I was a rock tour manager, and this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to tour with my act.
To Afghanistan?
What did you dislike about Rock the Casbah? And then I'll tell you what I did like.
Well, I think I mentioned in my review, I like the first 20, 25 minutes or so, especially showing him as this low-down promoter that's sort of scamming people.
The opening scene's priceless.
Yeah.
He's auditioning this woman, and she has a kind of a lousy voice, and he says, your voice is abrasive, but I think that'll work for you.
Yes.
Hand me over your check.
You're an irritant, and that's good. And, that's very entertaining. And then we get into this whole thing. His receptionist is played by Zooey Deschanel, and she's a good singer. And he takes her to a dive bar and some sort of singing competition, and attracts the attention of this fellow that's recruiting artists for this USO tour. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we're in Afghanistan, and then it's the slow slide into mediocrity and lousiness that the film starts to take. I was kind of disappointed that I think I mentioned in my review that Zooey pulls a Janet Leigh, and she's out of there in 20 minutes. And so if you're looking to see the new girl on the big screen, you're going to be out of luck. And it seems for a lot of the film, it's just Bill Murray sort of doing shtick that we've seen him do before. They're doing the whole culture clash thing with him being the fish out of water there, and everyone, you know, kind of looking at him strange and dodging bullets. And he gets involved with the supposedly wacky characters. Bruce Willis has sort of a nothing role as a sort of a for-hire mercenary that's really more interested in selling his memoirs, and he's just kind of squinting and glaring and pointing his weapon at people, the whole thing. There's these two hucksters that are selling guns and ammo, played by Scott Kahn and Danny McBride, who are sort of doing riffs on some of the characters they've done in movies like the Ocean's 11 movies, and Danny McBride's done on, you know, Eastbound and Down, and they're, you know, fast talking, you know, kind of, you know, loosely moral guys, and they are in there for about 10 minutes or so, and then the topper is this ludicrous character played by Kate Hudson in it. This high-priced call girl that's operating out of Afghanistan.
Out of a trailer,
and she's wearing all these wacky outfits. And when Bill Murray first sees her, she's swimming in this pool with little diamond jewels attached to her head and all that. And, you know, they end up getting together, and there's a ridiculous sight gag of the aftermath of their torrent night together, and which is just silly. And then all of a sudden, she's wearing a top hat in one, you know, sequence, and it's just ridiculous. Plus this really lousy Southern accent, this Southern belle, well, la-dee-da type of thing. It's just very irritating. She's done much better than this, you know. I guess she's kind of trying to do a combination of Penny Lane, her almost famous character, and sort of a riff on the Jamie Lee Curtis character from Trading Places, the hooker that's got a good financial plan, you know, that sort of thing.
I'm not that far off from you. I agree that it was sort of sloppy. It's sort of unfocused. It's sort of this Shaggy Dog story where Bill Murray is doing his shtick. But I liked it. And I think if anyone but Bill Murray had starred in it, it would have been unbearable. But you said you liked the first half better than the second half. Well, like I said, it's sort of unfocused until about halfway through he walks into this cave, and there's this girl, and she's singing.
Well, it seemed like an attempt to sort of redeem the laziness of the first half of it, or the middle hour or so, and to sort of tack on some sort of message that she's, you know, singing, but it was, being brave and singing for freedom and all that.
But it was a good story, and then he takes her to this TV show that's, I guess, the Afghani version of America. What was it called?
Afghan Star. It's a good story that's deserving of a better film. If the whole film would have just been about her, it might have been more interesting. But then again, you know, they have to bring in the you know, great Eastern or American person to help rescue her, to push her into stardom.
Yeah, but it was Bill Murray. And that was cool. And then you had this other subplot with her father and these warlords that want to get revenge on the father because they don't want her singing, because that's against the law for a woman to sing. She's the first woman to sing on this Afghan Star show, and that's sort of based on a true story. In fact, there was a documentary called Afghan Star about this woman that this character is based on. I thought it was kind of nice. I thought it was kind of touching, her story and her arc and her relationship with Bill Murray. But then I agree, it's kind of weird. You know, there's this shootout and Bill Murray gets shot in the shoulder, where people always get shot in movies.
Well, then they're showing it in the trailer there, the scene of him singing these rock ballads, sort of like Nick Rivers from Saturday Night Live, for these stoic, stone-faced tribesmen, and that's supposed to be funny that he's singing, you know, like a Aerosmith song to these guys.
I thought that was funny, and I thought I liked the scenes with Danny McBride and Scott Conn. I thought they were funny. Bill Murray was kind of a head scratcher. I didn't know what the heck his character was up to. His character really didn't make any sense. It seems like it kind of came in from a different movie.
Are you talking about Bruce Willis?
Yeah, Bruce Willis. Okay.
And then like I say, you agree about the Kate Hudson character just doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
You know, but I like Bill Murray. He can. It seemed like, you know, he was trying to resuscitate the script. I mean, I kept on thinking back to about a year and a half ago with, was it St. Vincent? That was the film with Melissa McCarthy, where he was really doing a character, really doing, you know, making an effort and doing some really great acting. But a lot of this is kind of fall back on some familiar Murray stuff that we've seen before.
But it was directed by Barry Levinson, and I thought he did a really good job.
I
thought it was very cinematic. I thought it looked great. It had some great music.
Oh, the pacing is just off, and, you know, it just drags on and on, and it's just kind of a mess. This is closer to the Barry Levinson Toys rather than the Barry Levinson.
It's a lot better than Toys.
It's not saying much.
How was the script?
Like, how was
the screenplay?
It was unfocused.
Yeah.
And I think Bill Murray, I think, saved it. I really liked Rock the Casbah, despite its flaws. But
hurry if you want to go see it.
There is on the same writer is doing Bill Murray's. Yes, he's doing Bill Murray's Netflix Christmas special coming up, which we posted a very Murray Christmas. So
hopefully that's more entertaining. Hopefully. So
Jim disliked Rock the Casbah, and I liked Rock the Casbah. If we all had the same viewpoint, then there wouldn't be a need for two of us. Okay, let's see. Let's move on to truth.
Tonight, we have new information on the president's military service.
Here's to a great story.
Hey, Mary, these blogs are saying that the memos can be recreated in Microsoft Word.
Several experts have raised serious questions.
They're going to start an investigation.
This is bad.
They do not get to do this. They do not get to smack us just for asking the question.
And that's the truth, Ruth. This is about Dan Rather resigning in disgrace for putting up fake documents. And they try to make him out as quite the hero in this, trying to rewrite a little history, are they?
Well, not really.
I haven't seen it. Jim has.
Not really. They're, actually, the Dan Rather character is more of a supporting character in this. If there were some, you know, nominations to go around, Redford would definitely be in the supporting category. Although he's only attempting the Texas draw a little bit. It's mostly Robert Redford, and he's very convincing as a network newsman.
Did he do any of his weird Ratherisms like he used to do on election night? This election's hotter than Satan's anvil.
I know that you'd rather walk through a furnace in a gasoline suit. This race is hotter than a Times Square Rolex, and it has been all night long. George Bush is sweeping through the South like a big wheel through a Delta cotton
field.
They did
one of those, and there's a whole sequence with him at a bar after an awards there talking about courage.
Oh, yeah.
His final.
Did they have somebody come up to him and say, what's the frequency, Kenneth, and punch him in the face?
They didn't talk about that. Shucks. This is mostly the story of Mary Mapes, I believe is her
based
name.
Based
on her book. And Kate Blanchett delivers another Oscar-worthy performance. I think there's a possibility she could get nominated for this. She's very strong in it. Of course, you know, this is movie geeks. This is political geeks. So I'm going to try not to get into the political thing is. But I think we can get into some of the journalistic things that it brings up. I know that a couple of reviewers have said that they think the movie is sort of in the tank, that it's already on her side. It is somewhat in a way. You know, she's painted as a fairly sympathetic character, and the whole relationship with her and Rather is sort of a father-daughter thing, and it's very touching. But there's a lot of mistakes that are made that are sort of glossed over. I think the movie wants to say, hey, you know, that they're focusing in on the reporting of the story. story rather than the story itself, which is true, but there were certain things that, that they should have looked into. I think in the trailer, Kate Blanchett's character, Mary, is talking before this this board, this review board, and says, well, everyone's wrapped up in fonts and Times Roman and, you know, Xeroxing and all that.
Well, that's how they proved that she was a phony. And that she had put up a...
Well, you know, that she was kind of duped. That's what the movie wants us to say.
Yeah.
That they were rushing into something that they probably should have taken a little more time with. But the clock was ticking. This was in September before the election in November. That's something they probably should have sat down and taken a couple of more weeks with. Well, there are certain scenes in it that I'm just not quite buying. At one point, she goes online to actually read people's comments about the thing, which should never do. You know, you got to see all the little trolls postings and all that. But she's got a great team of actors with her playing her research staff. Topher Grace is terrific. Almost redeems himself from the American Ultra a few weeks ago.
I thought you were going to say Predators.
I didn't see that one. That's a few years ago.
Yeah.
Dennis Quaid's very good at it, playing an ex-soldier that's sort of working with Mary Mapes' team. And she's very good. Elizabeth Moss is terrific, but she's given very little to do. It's mostly seems like the fella's doing most of the legwork in it. One of our favorite actors, Tom Stacy Keach, is very good at playing the fella that's providing the papers, who, you know, is not quite on the up and up, it really seems. He's not quite got his things together. But it's sort of a divisive subject. The film is well done. It's well directed by James Vanderbilt, who I was surprised to find out this is his first directorial effort. Mm-hmm. That he's been writing films like Zodiac and the last two Spider-Man films. Mm-hmm. It's okay, but I don't think it's going to be a big awards winner at the end of the year.
I don't think it's going to do very well either.
But there's a much better investigative film coming out in a few weeks. So wait for that. It's kind of similar to The Insider a little bit, if you recall that from a few years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, okay. Very close to that.
The other movie we need to review is Room.
Truck. Wiggle out. Jump. Run. Somebody.
I'm scared.
I know. I'm gonna be there in your head talking to you the whole time.
Truck. Wiggle out. Jump when the truck slows down. Run. Somebody.
Room stars Brie Larson as a 24-year-old woman who had been kidnapped and has been held captive in a little room. It's actually a garden shed by this fellow named Old Nick. Mm. He goes in and sort of rapes her when he feels like it, which has resulted in a son, a 5-year-old son, that lives in the room with her. She escapes. I don't know if that's much of a spoiler. I think they show that in the trailer.
Yeah,
about the halfway point, she escapes. And then the second half of the movie is her and her son, adjusting to life outside Room. It's based on a popular novel. It seems like a tricky novel to film. It's told from the child's point of view, and he is the narrator of the novel, and he narrates film too, a lot of the film, I should say. And I suspect some of the narration from the film is pulled right out of the novel. It certainly seems like it. I don't think it was a particularly great movie. It's a good movie, and it's a powerful story. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of problems with it. This kid's in this room with his mom, and the kid's throwing these screaming fits. And after about an hour of this, it gets pretty tedious. I felt like I was trapped in the room with this kid. So it gets a little dull, and then they escape. And the escape sequence is fantastic. There's about 10 minutes in the middle of this movie that's really well done. It's shown from the kid's point of view, and the lights are bright, and he's in the back of this truck that Old Nick is driving. Old Nick thinks he's died, and he's wrapped up in this rug. That's a little bit convoluted, though, because I kept thinking, well, if Old Nick is cunning enough to get away for 7 years with this crime, wouldn't he be like check to see if this kid was breathing or not? That kind of bugged me, but I think when I get bored, I tend to question things like that. So there's this great, terrific, cathartic escape sequence, and then the boy and the mom move into her parents' house. In the 7 years that she's been held captive, her parents have divorced. Joan Allen and William H. Macy play her parents. They move into her mom's house with her new husband, and then it becomes boring again. It's sort of this soap opera. She argues with her mom. They bake cookies. They sort of attempt to adjust the life outside the room, and then it's over. What do you think, Jim?
I thought it was terrific. You talk about cinematic. This was cinematic. Mm-hmm. How they were able to show that 10 by 10 room that they're in, that shed. It's you know, it feels a little claustrophobic, but then at other times you feel, you know, as you're seeing from the child's point of view, that it's his whole world. The main reason to see this film is Brie Larson. She is turning into one of our most interesting young actresses. I don't think this is quite going to be the film that's going to push her into the public's knowledge.
Yeah.
It's not going to, you know, be a huge general public hit, but this will hopefully get her more studio films. I don't think the big studios have really utilized her that well so far, but I think she and Alicia Vikander are our most interesting young actresses around right now.
I think
now.
This will be good for her career, but I thought she played it wrong. I didn't think she seemed as damaged as a woman who's been stuck in that room. A woman stuck in a room for 7 years is going to be pasty.
Well,
she's going to be cowering, and she's going to have circles under her eyes. Brie Larson seemed, frankly, too healthy. She seemed sort of annoyed and sad that she was in this predicament.
Well, I thought you were talking about her mental state, because that's what it goes into in the film's second half. There's a scene with where she sort of snaps at her mother, and it really shows her frustration and her realization that she's lost, that these years have been stolen from her. There's another sequence in which she and her son are going through some old high school photos, and there's a picture of her with her cheerleading buddies, and she says something effective. Yeah, they had lives. They got to live the last 7 years.
Well, it's a good movie. I'm probably going to give it, you know, 3.5 out of 5. So it's, you know, I'm going to give it a mostly positive review. I just think it falls short of being a great movie. All right, so a split review on Room. Another movie that we saw last week at a screening was Love the Coopers. But we are forbidden from opining on Love the Coopers. But we can do it with hand motions now. Where's your thumb, Jim? Okay, Jim and I have our thumbs in a general direction right now. Check back in a couple weeks and you'll find it. It's like the punishment poll.
Find out where we
stand on Love the Coopers.
It doesn't get a pass.
This afternoon we're seeing Suffragette.
Women should not exercise judgment in political affairs.
If we allow women to vote, it will mean the loss of social structure.
Vote for women! Vote for women! Vote for women!
Which I believe stars Meryl Streep and
Carey Mulligan
and Helena Bonham Carter as three women at the forefront of the feminist movement. It sounds like a remake of Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
Without the fast cars.
That's right. So we'll talk about that next Monday. Burnt, we're seeing tomorrow night. That stars Bradley Cooper as a chef.
What do you want?
I'm going to run the best restaurant in the world.
If you're a chef, he's like the Rolling Stones.
I don't want my restaurant to be a place where you come and eat. I want people to sit at that table and be sick with longing.
I don't know much else about that. I guess we'll talk about that next Monday as
well. Sounds like the sitcom he was in a few years ago, that Kitchen Confidential. Big screen version of that.
Who's reviewing Burnt?
I think Kate is.
Kate Markey.
And I'm going to be reviewing the one tonight, which is
Our Brand is Crisis, starring Sandra Bullock.
She is the brightest and most innovative.
The best campaign strategist in the game.
Responsible for the greatest political upset in history.
The presidential campaign in South America.
Fragile democracy.
Economy in real trouble. Our candidate is considered arrogant and out of touch with people's lives.
How far are you behind?
28 points.
I don't know much about that one either.
Yeah, I know that she's an American sort of PR person sent down to help a guy win an election in South America, I think. And as I recall reading, this was written for a man, but Sandra was interested, so they retooled it for her, kind of like what would happen with Emily Blunt with Sicario.
Who else is in that?
Billy Bob Thornton is in that. The candidate, is a familiar actor. I just can't recall his name, a familiar Spanish actor, but looks.
Anthony Mackie's also in it,
and Zoe Kazan is in it, right? Yeah,
so. Anthony Mackie was in Love the Coopers too.
Oh yes, the Falcon strikes again.
All right, so that's.
Oh yeah.
All right, so look for reviews of all those movies next Monday. The new Star Wars trailer. What it debuted on a
Monday Night Football.
Monday
the sneak peek was shown during ESPN's Monday Night Football, scene by a TV audience of over 16 million, followed by the immediate release on YouTube, Facebook, and platforms worldwide. In just 24 hours, the trailer was viewed more than 112 million times.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish
what you started.
It's true. All of it. The dark side. The Jedi. They're real.
The Force. It's calling to you.
So it broke the internet, and then it broke the telephone machines.
Websites
at the ticket
crashed. Ticket sales were through the roof.
And everybody's analyzing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
Well, you know, it is interesting. We don't, as we said last week, we didn't see Mark Hamill in the poster. We don't see him in this one either.
Which is, I think, is the smartest thing about what we have seen.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot. I think too much. But just at that 140-minute mark, you see his hand touch R2-D2. So that
was
enough.
It looks like it's a metal
hand. They had to give us. It looks like his hand that
that he lost to his daddy.
And it looks to be centered around the characters, what we do know. And Disney has sent us stuff ad nauseum. It centers around the main characters of Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, and Finn, John Boyega. I think the most interesting detail from Monday's new trailer is that the events of the original trilogies, episode 4, 5, and 6, have become kind of a myth now in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. Quote, there were stories about what happened, says Rey in the voiceover. And then Han Solo says, yes, it's true. All of it. The dark side, the Jedi, they're real. So it's almost like everything that happened in the middle section has just become a thing of story,
a mythology.
Yeah.
Now, I did spot Billy Dee Williams in the trailer as well. He was in the background drinking a Colt 45 malt liquor with Jar Jar Binks, I believe. But what other details? Yeah, and they're showing, what, all 7 Star Wars movies?
Yes, you can buy the full starting at 4 a.m.
Now,
in the morning.
Now, in what order are they going to show them, though? Are they going to show them Chapters 1, which were made in the 90s, and then show the...
They're showing 1 through...
So showing Phantom Menace first, and then Star Wars 4th.
Yeah, the original, which is called New Hope.
So they're going to show it in not chronological order, but the order that they are.
Although Disney was really clever. We ran a story because Disney sent us the photos. They showed the trailer with various symbols and whatnot on the Great Wall of China. So it was a really cool marketing.
Got to see a little more of Oscar Isaac in this trailer,
We
did. His last one, who's playing, who doesn't seem to be out of his X-Wing fighter,
And
duds.
We saw Carrie Fisher.
Little quick sneak of her.
I predict it's going to bomb.
Who cares? No, it's old.
Actually, didn't tickets go on sale like last Monday or Tuesday?
Oh, no, that's when it crashed. It crashed websites. It crashed Fandango.
But I think Michael said he bought tickets. And then I heard people are like selling tickets on eBay for thousands of dollars.
They were on eBay immediately.
Yeah. There was actually talks. Well, people still care about Star Wars? Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, most of the 7 o'clock shows are sold out. I checked last night. There are a few of the 10 o'clock screenings.
It's like 6 weeks in advance or more. So,
And primarily opening that same day is, like we talked before, the Comedy Sisters with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, and Alvin and the Chipmunks, the next movie, also opens that day as well.
Counter-marketing.
Something to get excited about. The new Star Wars. I wonder if they're going to show it to us in advance. Maybe they won't.
Which makes me wonder, they've been premiering big things on the 18th of, around the 18th of every month, so it makes me wonder what we're going to see November 18th. Will we see, this was the final trailer. So, and there is scheduled a huge lightsaber battle in Los Angeles, and Melissa Howland's all over that. So,
They
also announced last week was that Chris Rock would be hosting the Oscars this year. Chris Rock hosted the Oscars, 7 or 8 years ago?
He previously hosted the 77th Oscar telecast in 2005, so this is his second go-around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't remember him doing a particularly great job.
Like, the only acting you ever see at the Oscars is when people act like they're not mad they lost. I remember one year when Halle Berry won the Oscar. Nicole Kidman was smiling so wide, she should have won an Emmy at the Oscars for her great performance.
Yeah, I remember that. Was that the year of Elia Kazan? Or was that another year? I remember his joke about that kind of, rankled some feathers there. And said, De Niro don't like rats, I think was his joke, as I recall. I don't know if it was from when he was hosting or maybe he was just introducing that year.
I like Chris Rock, but he's not really a song and dance man like Patrick Harris or Billy Crystal when they come out and they do their...
Or Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah.
I was actually hoping... I think they may have seen bigger ratings with the It comedian Kevin Hart. of the moment. Mm-hmm. Kevin Hart would have gone over well, I think.
He's too short.
I would have liked to have seen...
hey, I'm down here!
I would have liked to have seen Eddie Murphy maybe host.
Yeah, never going to happen.
After the whole thing with Brett Ratner. So that would have been, you know, producers David Hill and Reginald Hudlin announced that last week. The 88th Oscars will be broadcast live. Oscar Sunday, February 28th.
And I'm sure he'll do a better job than Whoopi.
Ellen, I'm sorry.
And Chris Rock recently directed that comedy special, Amy Schumer, at the Apollo.
Yeah, there was some talk
was on
about
HBO.
Her hosting, but that maybe in a couple of years, you know.
And he recently directed Top 5.
Yeah.
And Paramount put that out. And in 2009, he ventured into the documentary world as a writer, producer, and star of Good Hair.
Yeah, hope it'll be good there. I mean, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
As we said, Steve Jobs opened at a disappointing number 7 at the box office. It is directed by Danny Boyle, which got us to thinking, what are some of our favorite Danny Boyle movies? This guy's been around. He's a British director. He's been around since Shallow Grave in 1994, which starred Ewan McGregor, who was sort of his go-to actor for the first 4 or 5 of his films. You ever see Shallow Grave, Jim?
I've seen bits of it.
Oh, it's good. It's a pretty tough crime movie with Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah.
I think it's about a suitcase full of money and the lengths that people go. And there's a lot of torture, and it's a very violent crime film.
Yeah.
You seen that, Michelle?
No, I haven't.
Never saw Shallow Grave. And then, of course, Trainspotting is the movie that really put him on the map.
Yeah, I've seen that, that's for sure. Yeah. Bagby and stuff like that.
Whenever I watch that on DVD, I have to turn the subtitles on, though.
It's a tough, except when they're imitating Sean Connery. Mish money, Penny. Sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But, it's a very entertaining film. There's some talk that he might do a follow-up. Might do a Trainspotting 2.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be something. But had Ewan again in it.
Yeah, and Robert Carlyle was in it. It was the first time I saw a lot of these actors.
Yeah, I'm just blanking on the actor that plays Sherlock on Elementary. He's in it.
Oh, he played Spud.
Yeah.
I can't think of that. Ewan, I think his name's also Ewan.
Oh, gosh.
But, he was in a Match Point.
Yeah, he was also in Hackers.
Yeah.
That's where he met his future wife. Johnny Miller is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah. Met his future wife.
He didn't play Spud, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Spud Angelina Jolie, he married.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But right. Spud Boy was another actor, huh?
Yeah, I'll think of it. Or I probably won't think of it.
Yeah, Robert Carlyle, you said.
Yeah.
Great.
Moving on, A Life Less Ordinary. I did not see that. That also had Ewan McGregor. And,
that was about the Angels.
Cameron Diaz, I believe.
Oh,
was
boy,
that.
I did see that there. Oh,
that was considered quite the bomb.
That was a huge bomb. Holly Hunter plays an angel in it, and it's pretty dreadful.
Delroy Lindo, I believe, was
also another angel.
I didn't see that. And then he did The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio, which was Leonardo's. Was that his follow-up to Titanic?
I think it was. It was released a few months after Titanic, wasn't it?
I never saw that.
Never saw that.
No one in this room ever saw The Beach. I don't even know what it's about. Okay, 28 Days Later. Now we're talking.
Yeah, the rage.
Yes.
That kind of just came out from nowhere.
What a great
surprise that was.
But they reference that in the remake of Dawn of the Dead about the sprinting zombies, because this is the first one where the zombies are really... But they're not technically zombies in the film, are they?
No, they weren't. They were kind of they were more like they had rabies.
Yeah.
And it was written by Alex Garland, who did Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah. But boy, they make some headway. They run, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
They're charging at you. But yeah, that's a very entertaining film.
Yeah, 28 Days Later.
Naomi Harris is in that.
Yes.
Who's the new Miss Moneypenny,
Okay. Millions. I didn't see that one either. I guess there's several movies on this list.
Oh, Millions?
I didn't see. Did you see Millions?
Did not see Millions. About the boys that find the check for $1 million or something?
I never saw that one. Okay.
The Irish Boys?
But I did see Sunshine. That's the one where they're trying to reignite the sun. That's actually a pretty scary, interesting science fiction movie.
Yes,
Chris Evans.
One of my favorite. Chris Evans, Cillian Murphy, Rose Byrne. Another one written by Alex Garland.
Then he followed that up with his Oscar-winning Slumdog Millionaire, which won Best Picture and Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
Very entertaining.
Yeah.
Actually, it's weird. Well, a little sidetrack, but when I was actually on the Mayor of Games show, I had heard about it playing at a couple of film festivals, so I mentioned it to some of the people, you know, backstage for the crew members. Said, I heard about this weird, like, dog millionaire film about an Indian kid on the game show, and they had no idea what I was talking about. And then it comes out and it ends up winning Best Picture and it's just exploding here.
Won 8 Oscars.
And it played at the St. Louis International Film Festival and won the best film at the St. Louis International Film Festival.
Oh.
It was a big crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
But some of it is really, really rough. The stuff about, you know, growing up.
Oh, yeah. Pour acid in the kid's eyes so he can go be a better beggar.
Oh, yeah, it's rough. Yeah. But talk about your great endings. I tell you, it's a great one.
That's a great movie. And then 127 Hours with James Franco. That's a great movie.
That's a great movie. Not kind of a happy end.
That movie was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture.
And a well-deserved Best Actor for Franco, who has to pretty much carry that whole film, and he's terrific in it.
Yeah, he's good. And then his next movie was Trance, which I actually interviewed Danny Boyle when Trance came out, but I was told to keep all questions focused on Trance.
Had
James McAvoy and Rosario Dawson. Yeah.
Vincent Cassell.
Who did some great nude scenes, by the way.
Yes, but boy, it's pretty dreadful flick.
Yeah, it's not a very good movie. It's kind of a caper film. And so, really, if you think about it, in the past 21 years, he hasn't directed that many movies. He's not that prolific.
Well, he also did the opening ceremony for the London 2012 Olympic Games. Right.
Yeah. And that was not without controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's done Steve Jobs. So
he's also directed some television and theater, including 2011's Frankenstein at the Royal National Theater, which starred Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller.
Johnny Lee Miller. I left out his Lee when I mentioned earlier. Yes, yes.
So we lost kind of a famous actress.
Over the weekend,
Maureen O'Hara passed away at age 95, which means she would have been born in 1920, or maybe 1919.
1920.
Yeah, so she would have only been like 18 when she filmed Hunchback of Notre Dame,
which came out
in 39.
Yeah, I was thinking that she is, most people consider the golden age of Hollywood to be pre-1950, and I think only Doris Day and Kirk Douglas are the only...
Olivia de Havilland still around.
Yeah, and Olivia de Havilland, the only stars that, you know, you would say were big stars sort of above the title or first or second billing.
Yeah.
So there's just a handful left, and we lost her.
O'Hara passed away in her sleep at home in Boise, Idaho, and so that was announced Saturday morning.
Yeah, I would have thought it would have been in Ireland somewhere,
she was born in Ireland.
Yeah, discovered by Charles Laughton, and besides Hunchback of Notre Dame, she did two or three other films with him. She was sort of her mentor for a time. Mm-hmm. And
worked with John Ford quite a bit.
Yeah, and I've heard in a couple of the obits her referred to as the Queen of Technicolor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was Maria Montez, but with that red hair, it would certainly be Maureen O'Hara. You know, unbelievably gorgeous, especially in, when you get to The Quiet Man.
Oh, yeah. They show The Quiet Man every St. Patrick's Day at the High Point as part of their Saturday morning.
And what's one of the films they show every Christmas?
They do It's a Wonderful Life. Well, Miracle on 34th Street.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. But they don't do that at the High Point. They did that at Webster U last year.
Oh, okay, okay.
But the High Point, they always do.
I think AMC, the movie cable channel, will run 24 hours of Miracle on 34th Street, which is... It's a wonderful film.
Isn't it?
Yes, it's a classic. It's really funny. It's interesting, if you ever see the original trailer to it, they never mention Santa Claus or Christmas.
No, because it was shown in July. It first. And he went on to win the Oscar for it.
Yeah, Edmund Gwynn, he's terrific in it. And Maureen O'Hara is just stunning in it. Mm-hmm. She's just lovely.
Didn't they remake that a few years ago with
Elizabeth,
what's his name?
The Attenborough, Richard Attenborough in the Santa Claus role. Yeah. Yes, I think John Hughes had a
Why do they remake
in that
these movies? Didn't they remake It's a Wonderful Life with Marlo Thomas?
Oh, for television. It happened one Christmas, is what it was called.
I remember that. I remember seeing that when it aired.
Orson Welles is as Mr. Potter.
Marlo Thomas.
But of course...
Back to Maureen O'Hara. We kind of got off on a tangent there.
But of course, when we mention The Quiet Man, we have to mention her usual co-star, three or four of the movies they did together, John Wayne, one of the few actresses that could really hold the screen opposite John Wayne, really strong presence. And I think John Wayne was quoted a few years ago, said, hey, who are your favorite actors? And he says, well, I like this guy, and Maureen O'Hara, she's a great guy.
Yep.
But they did Fort Apache. Big Jake, I guess, was their last one in the 70s.
I think her last movie was John Candy, Only the Lonely.
Yeah, that was the last theatrical film, and then she did some TV movies. Only the Lonely, she's great, and she's paired off with Anthony Quinn in it, and they're terrific.
Aren't they great?
It's a very entertaining film. So if you want to remember Maureen O'Hara, any of those films would be good.
Well, and after her long career, she finally received an honorary award at the 2014 Governor's Award.
Okay, rest in peace, Maureen O'Hara. We're going to have to wrap this up. We'll be back next week to review Suffragette and Burnt and Our Brandis Crisis. and talk about some other films. But until then, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
Listen again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, Don. Hey, 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 hey.
Black leather,
I'm
black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.